doors are locked.
Okay, we had half of you walked out, so thank you for waiting until you could get in. We appreciate you coming tonight. My name is Lisa Norman. For those of you that don't know me, I'm one of the coordinators for The Right Road, the event that we have at high school tomorrow, focusing on teen safety, all aspects of high-risk behavior. And we just thought it would be great to capture one of our awesome resources, Chris McDonald from the Internet Crimes Against Children under the DCI, to come present to parents of all ages, because that's who's carrying phones and has digital devices. And if all of you are like I am, I don't know anything about my phone. I just want it to work. And when it doesn't work, I hand it to my child. So not the best process, really, considering all the things that are available on the phone. So we're really glad to have Chris here and Terry Markham, also from Uprising in Sheridan. And I should let Terry just explain what she does. I don't want to misinterpret what your title is. But anyway, so thank you for coming. If you have questions, feel free to ask during this. And please tell everybody what you learned tonight. We were hoping to have 240 parents here that got in, or more, invited. But we're glad you're here, and thanks for coming.
Thank you, Lisa. I already mentioned that I'm not that great at multitasking, so if I try to click with my microphone and talk into my clicker, I'm going to apologize ahead of time. As Lisa said, my name is Chris McDonald. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Before I get started, I just want to recognize the fact that, given this opportunity, it's part of my mission at ICAC to do presentations, but it's also kind of my passion. And we'll get into what I do and how I do and what ICAC does down the road, but I just want to have that be said. I don't get this opportunity unless someone reaches out to me. So, and as parents and people that care about their kids, that is basically what I'm doing here, and I really appreciate it. On top of that, I'm joined tonight by, I guess, we're kind of partners in crime now, Terry Markham from Uprising, and I will let Terry kind of explain what she does, but then we'll visit a little bit more.
Well, hello. Uprising is actually a nonprofit that is an anti-human trafficking and anti-sexual exploitation nonprofit. So there's a lot of different things that we do, but one of the key things that we do is prevention education for youth. So we do a tremendous amount of getting directly in front of youth and equipping them and empowering them with tools and conversations and information that will lower their risk of ever experiencing exploitation or experiencing exploitation again. And then we do a lot of getting in front of parents, caregivers, educators, other professionals who work with youth, and equipping them with those same tools as well. Letting you guys know about, hey, here's some conversations, here's some key concepts and things that you can be talking to the youth in your life about, whatever your role is with those youth, that will lower their risk of experiencing exploitation as well. So, like Chris said, we work together a lot. We have some resources up here that we've co-developed, and we tend to, anytime we get the chance to present together, we love to do that. So tonight is me crashing in on Chris's party, so you're gonna see his slides, and I'll pop in with relevant information here and there whenever something pops in my head.
That sounds great, thanks Terry. And I would say, when I became the ICAC commander in 2019, I was also told, hey, Chris, you're on the Human Trafficking Task Force. And I was like, oh, I don't really know what that is, but I'm going to go check it out. And that's the only reason I was able to meet Terry. I actually learned so much. It did take long to realize there's such a nexus between human trafficking and my investigations in child sexual exploitation. And like one thing, and I'll kind of run over some slides a little bit, but one thing you'll probably not hear me refer to this tonight, or the files of the material that I have to view every day, is child pornography. I actually don't usually use that term, and I'll tell you why. It's typically, I'll tell you, because it kind of legitimizes what it is, because pornography is not illegal, right? So I usually refer to it as child CSAM, which is child sexual exploitation material, okay, or assault material, something like that. So that's just some of the terminology you'll hear. I also, of course, you know, not only military, but of course, law enforcement loves an acronym. So we have several in here. I'll explain what those are. If anyone gets lost in it, just let me know. a little bit about myself before I get started. I really do think it's important to kind of know where I'm coming from and what I do on a daily basis. You know, I'm born and raised in Wyoming. I'm actually born and raised in Gillette, Wyoming, where I lived less than 4 years I spent in the Marine Corps. I've lived here my entire life. I guess, well, I was about a year in Montana as well, fighting fire. But I actually started my law enforcement career. I got about 22 years in law enforcement. I started at the Campbell County Sheriff's Office. I spent a year in Johnson County in the early 90s as a detention officer. I worked for Sheriff Kirkpatrick. It was my very first law enforcement job. So this is my home. I mean, I live in Cheyenne now, but Northeast Wyoming is always going to be my home. So when I was given the opportunity to speak here, of course, I jumped on it. As I said, I spent about 5 years total prior to joining DCI in 2005. Became a task force officer at the Division of Criminal Investigation at their Northeast Enforcement Team, which is in Gillette, Wyoming. I was in the Gillette office. There I spent several years as an undercover narcotics investigator. From there I went to major crimes. From about 2009 to 2014, I actually supervised the Gillette office along with my casework. In 2019, I was promoted and I accepted a job as the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force Commander and as a computer crime team leader. And then I moved to Cheyenne. So that's what I've been doing for since 2019. And I'll tell you, and the reason I kind of go through that, one thing that's important to me to share is, so I got 22 years in law enforcement. I've worked every type of case. I've worked everything from about drugs undercover to working homicides to officer-involved shootings to frauds, everything. I didn't think I could be bothered anymore, right? So when I went into ICAC, I was really wrong. So what we see on a daily basis, you know, I think it's important to know, even though there's all kinds of different exploitation cases that we work, we're not typically talking about, I think sometimes people have a misnomer that, oh, it's just, you know, almost adults showing each other images. You know, what the cases that we work typically involve graphic sexual assault of children, right? So that's what we're talking about today, in addition to some of the other things. So what I do want to talk to and kind of give a brief what we're going to do today, and before I really get started on that, I would tell you that this is everyone's presentation. Man, I can talk about any one of these topics for 4 hours. We have an hour or so total. So if you folks want to visit about something, literally just raise your hand. If you need to take a phone call, I'm okay with that. Just whatever we need to do. I'm totally flexible in that regard. So I love feedback. So seriously, if there's something if you're curious about, just ask me. If I can tell you, I will. If I don't know the answer, I'll tell you that. And if I won't answer it, I'll tell you that. There are some things I won't share just because if it involves investigative technique, I won't share that. We have, you know, well over 100 active cases right now, so I would never want to say anything that would jeopardize even how we do some things. So I want to go over quickly, and we'll talk about a little bit of DCI overview, then ICAC and its mission. You know, I get a little bit... you know, it just seems second nature to me when I talk about ICAC and what we do, but I don't know that everybody knows that. So I want to share a little bit what the ICAC, Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, is on a national level as well as the state level. And then what are our kids facing? You know, what are we seeing every day that on my desk? And then what you folks might also see in your homes? And then what can we do about it? You know, this is not a class where I'm going to, it's not a class at all, frankly, it's a presentation. But it's not a presentation where I'm going to be able to say, like, hey, take your iPhone, go to settings, go to this. That's not what this is. I mean, the way I learn that stuff is I Google it. You know, and I mean, this is for resources. So if you have questions like that, my information will be up there at the end. And you can certainly get a hold of me. But it's not a how-to guide. It's a broader ideas that we're sharing tonight. So like I said, that discussion is going to be key for me. But when we start, I just really want to talk about Wyoming DCI a little bit. I also think DCI, the Division of Criminal Investigation, is sometimes a little vague in some people's minds. We're a little different than other state law enforcement agencies. So we work for the Attorney General and the governor of the state of Wyoming. We have actually, DCI has very limited jurisdiction. We only have original jurisdiction in very few crimes. Those include any violation of the Wyoming Controlled Substance Act, any organized crime across the jurisdictional boundaries, internet crimes against children, and any computer crime, right? So those are the only types of crimes that we can investigate anywhere in the state at any time. Now, that doesn't mean that's all we do. We also have concurrent jurisdiction in every other crime. What that means is if there's another crime, say there's a homicide that occurs in a small jurisdiction, we can certainly go take that case, but there's only very limited ways we can do that. And that's from a request from a chief, a sheriff, a district attorney, or county attorney. So that's it. So we get a lot of folks that call us up and say, hey, we'd like you to investigate our local law enforcement. We actually can't do that. We don't have jurisdiction to do that. So that's just a real quick, and that's maybe not super applicable about what we're talking about, because we do have original jurisdiction in ICAC crimes, but I just think it's important to know what kind of agency you have working for you in the state. So I just always put this up here, and this kind of is applicable as we go along. I'll move back here. If I move around and bother people too much, I apologize ahead of time. I do a lot of apologizing, so let's go with that. So DCI is actually separated into what we call enforcement teams. There's actually seven teams in the state of Wyoming that work for DCI. There are 37 full-time agents for the entire state of Wyoming. That's supplemented by about 24, 25 task force officers. So a task force officer is basically an agent or an officer or deputy from a local jurisdiction that is on loan to DCI for typically about 2 years. And it just supplements our manpower. We honestly couldn't operate without those. It really bonds and fosters great working relationships with all other local agencies. That's one thing, of course, in Wyoming is really just this medium-sized town stretch over a huge amount of space. So if you're a jerk to one person, the person in the other state is probably going to know about it. So it does foster really good relationships, right? As you can see up here, these are all our enforcement teams. Of course, I worked in Gillette. As you can see, or maybe you can't, hopefully everyone can see that. In the Northeast, the Northeast enforcement team was responsible for Sheridan, Crook, Campbell, Weston counties, and Campbell, I guess, too. That was our area of operation, but we worked all over the state, right? That was our main area. So that's split up into all these, the Northwest, the Southwest, Central, and then Southeast. Now there's also, way down here, you see ICAC and then our intel unit. So there's about 10 folks in each one of these areas that work these areas. I have 6 folks, and I cover the entire state, right? So I have 3 field officers. One is in Cheyenne, one is in Casper, and one is over here in Rock Springs. So the reason I show that is that, you know, with our enforcement team, we have pretty good coverage. With ICAC, we split it in thirds, like that. So our gap is here, right? That's hard to get to from anywhere for us. So that, I want that to illustrate that, what we're dealing with. We talk about number of tips that we generate, or the number of tips that we receive, cases we work. I want you all to know that's what we're dealing with, right? And if not for any other reason, that's how we're set up right now, right? So, like I said, we have 6 agents with some affiliates and a little bit of federal help working every internet crime against a child in the state of Wyoming. So that's what we're doing. See, wrong button. I tried to laser everybody and should have done this one. Alright. So, internet crimes against children. What, you know, ICAC, like I said, our acronyms. So ICAC is actually a national initiative on the federal level. So we are completely funded, or almost completely funded, by the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Program, which is a federal grant. So the state of Wyoming pays for it. 5 agents and their vehicles. All of my equipment, all my overtime, all my travel, everything's paid for through the ICAC grant. So if we don't have that grant, we don't really have an ICAC unit. So that's how important this is. ICAC is considered the Internet Crimes Against Internet Crimes Against Children Task Forces. It's actually 61 coordinated task forces across the United States. So there is an ICAC task force in every single state. It's easy to understand probably that states with more population have more ICAC units, right? California, Florida, Illinois, New York, they all have multiple ICAC task forces. Those consist of about 4,500 state and local law enforcement officers. So even though we have multiple federal partners, it's actually a program set up for state and locals. So it's a state and local organization, a state and local task forces. All the folks that I work with, like I said, we're the grant administrators, so as a state of Wyoming, but we pretty much just work with other local agencies. That's how ICAC is set up. Federal agencies have their own kind of ICAC, some call them VICAP, whatever names they have to work the same type of cases. So this is, like I said, I just again, kind of want everyone to be able to see what we have as at our disposal. This is the IPAC task force in the state of Wyoming. Once you quite let's meet. We have two agents located in Cheyenne, two agents located in Casper, two agents located in Rock Springs, and that's how we kind of separate out our cases, right? We also have a little bit of one forensic investigator in Cheyenne, that's a new position for us. We just got it filled. We have one Homeland Security Investigations forensic examiner located in Casper. That's the federal partnership I talked about. And then we have one HSI special agent and one FBI special agent that work to help us on a part-time basis. They're probably less than 10% of the time they work ICAC cases, but they do help us out. Then we also have several affiliate agencies. Affiliate agencies are not quite task force officers. They are agencies that give us a hand in exchange for equipment and training. So I'm very happy to say and very proud to say Johnson County Sheriff's Office and Buffalo Police Department are two very new affiliate agencies of ours. So I've known the sheriff for years, and I knew the prior chief for, we actually worked in the jail together in the early 90s, but I just met the new chief, both super supportive of ICAC. So they just came on board, but they're already getting helping us with cyber tips. So that's a huge benefit for us, and in my mind, it's a huge benefit for your community. And you know, both the sheriff and the chief deserve credit for that. They reached out to me, so I really appreciate that. There I go again. So we talked about ICAC. Now, what does ICAC do? Is an easy enough question, right? But there's a little bit more to it than just, hey, we work cases against them, or that internet crimes that involve kids. So we really work three different types of cases, if you think about it, split into two distinct areas, reactive and proactive. So a reactive case is just like what we call a cyber tip. We receive cyber tips, and what a cyber tip is a report from any what we call an electronic service provider, or an ESP. All that is any social media platform. It doesn't even have to be a social media platform. But think about Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, Google, Secrenos, Kik, Omegle, Discord. Any social media app out there, how many of those that I just said does everybody know? Who knows what Omegle is? Yeah, right? Your kids do. Right, your kids do. It's very popular with gamers. Discord is the same way. We'll talk about that. Anyway, so anytime any of those social media platforms detect what they believe to be child sexual exploitation material on their servers, they generate a report and send it to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or NCMEC. NCMEC is actually a large nonprofit group that works as a clearinghouse for tips and also a resource center for law enforcement and others. So not only can these social media platforms send this information to NCMEC, but actually citizens can call in and report to NCMEC as well. So once NCMEC receives one of these tips from an ESP, they use open source platforms to try to geolocate that. If it geolocates in the state of Wyoming, it comes on my desk. So I made a bit of a change, but when I took over the unit, I get every single cyber tip. Every single cyber tip in the state of Wyoming lands on my desk. And I view every single one, I view every single file, I vet it, and I send it to the investigator it needs to go to. So I do that for several reasons, but the biggest reason is I want to know what's going on, obviously, in my state, right? So, and I wouldn't say I'm a control freak, but I also want to make sure I know where that's going. It's hard to give that to someone you don't know, right? And you just hope it gets done. Like, at least I can say, oh yeah, I remember that file, I remember that tip. So when they're discussing that with me, I know that. So that's something that I personally do. So just some numbers. I never used to be a number guy. Like when I worked in case, I was like, I don't care about numbers. Is that person, it was a good case? Yeah, so I'm talking about numbers. I now remember, this is my own fault. I didn't like numbers, now I'm a numbers guy. That's what I do. But these are some interesting, and in all reality, these are very interesting. So the year before I got to took over the unit, there were 199 total cyber tips in the state of Wyoming, which is quite a bit. That's a little less than one per day, right? So that's one report of child sexual assault material or child sexual assault imagery to the state of Wyoming. So 2019, we, you know, 262, then in 2020, man, it just killed me, 531. Did anyone remember anything that happened in 2019, 2020? Right? That was a little more applicable in 2021 when we're still like clawing off from under our rocks, right? But initially, even at the federal level, it was, oh, well, COVID must have caused all that. All the creeps are at home more, so they can just, you know, look for his child or CSAM all the time, and kids have more time at home on the internet too. That's part of it. There's clearly, I mean, more access means more probability that someone may be getting exploited, right? But the other thing is this. So a lot of platforms, that was a huge initiation of, you know, they exploited AI and photo DNA or artificial intelligence in photo DNA. So they were able to identify a lot more CSAM on their servers, and they just pushed it out to us. So you'll see up there, in, I think, was it 2019? In 2020, NCMEC received 21 million cyber tips. And that's worldwide, okay? So in 2021, that jumped to 29 million, right? So a jump of 8 million is significant. And you can see that in our numbers as well. So then in 2020, we go 531. Last year, we were 613. We're a little better than that today because I had to do some tips this morning before I left. We'll be over 700 this year, right? We have six people working that. So the math is easy. Each one of those individuals are going to have to work 100 cyber tips, right? We're never going to be able to do that. So I spend every day triaging these cyber tips, right? So which ones are the ones we can act on right now? Which ones rise to the level of action immediately? And there's a lot of ways that we can filter that. But at the end of the day, if I have a pile that high, I know in there somewhere is probably a kid that's being abused. I know that makes sense to everybody. It's a rhetorical question. But that's what we're looking at every day. Okay? So that's the degree of the seriousness of the situation in the state of Wyoming. And we're not unique. Like, it's actually easier to see it in Wyoming because there's so much, we're a lot smaller. We're the smallest ICAC in the United States. I would also say we're probably one of the best. And the reason that is because there are so few of us. We can take each case as it comes. Like, there are states that won't even look at like a, cyber tips come in several forms, like an electronic form, which means that's very low priority, priority 3, priority 2, and priority 1. So a lot of ICACs won't even look at an e-tip, is what we call it. So we've worked multiple production cases off e-tips. So because we can view those, or we can vet it for what they are, if that makes sense. So in some ways, we're actually quite a bit luckier and better than a lot. But if you think about the way I explain to my bosses is this. We, you know, our drug guys, you know, if you get an interdiction on the interstate, that's your case, right? This would be like, and we get about, on average in 2022, we're getting about 67 cyber tips a month. So I said, you name me a team that can handle 67 interdictions in a month, right? That's what we're talking about, except these are kids. Now, is every single image a kid in Wyoming? No. Nope, it's not. But there are several, right? We got it. We got self-productions, we got it. Other types of production, we have hands-on cases. So it's every bit of child that I'm, you know, 700 times a year. And some of these tips have 300 files in them, 100 files in them. So you have to view every single one of those and see what's what and get it to the investigator needs to go to. So that's our, and of course it's easy to see here that we're setting records in a bad way every year now. And it's just, like I said, it's a combination of things, but that's, our resources are really getting overran. I was in the military, so I was thinking, the perimeter is breached. We're getting it, you know. We're danger close. That's where we're at. So, but we also work two other types of cases in generalities. And those are more proactive cases. Now, these are the type of cases that every investigator likes to work because they are being active, right? They're not trying to react to what's coming out. So one of those is a peer-to-peer case. I don't know if anyone knows what peer-to-peer file sharing is, but some of us in the room, if we remember Napster or LimeWire, where you could get, you know, music, movies, whatever else off the internet, right? You basically put your machine goes out on the internet looking for files to download. It grabs on, you have to save the right software, it'll grab it out of the internet and it'll download a file. Well, people that traffic in child pornography or CSAM do the very same thing. We're actually lucky enough to have a guy in our unit that actually created the first law enforcement software that was able to investigate those and detect CSAM on the internet for upload. That's how we started investigating that. So that's a case where if we get an upload or download from someone, from a computer, we can tell where that computer is, and then we go and we, you know, if we have an enforcement action against that person or the user of that computer. That's pretty straightforward. And then the other type of proactive case is kind of what I think a lot of people think of as child crimes. You know, kind of the to catch a predator type UC ops, chat ops, where we're, you know, we have investigators that are chatting or putting advertisements out there for, you know, people that are looking to have, you know, sex with kids. You know, someone responds to that, they show up, surprise, it's not a kid, it's the cops. Sorry, you got to go to jail, right? So I think that's what a lot of people think ICAC is. That's actually very, we don't have the bandwidth right now really to work a lot of those ops because of the reactive side of the house. And the reality is there's a lot of resources that are put into that. You know, I think it's a misnomer. I mean, there's so much oversight on that. It's a pretty big undertaking. But, of course, those are great operations to work. So that's just a little bit about what we do on a day-to-day basis. I've already been talking most of the day, so, I mean, anything to add?
This will just be a great time to mention that NCMEC, they do a lot more than just this. I actually have one of their resource cards sitting over here. Because they are also the organization that you or youth could reach out to if they ever did find material of themselves, pictures of themselves, or if they sent it to someone and then it got out and they wanted it taken down. You can reach out to NCMEC and they will actually filter that down to like these guys to try to get some of that material removed off of different platforms and off of the internet.
Yeah, and that's a great, and when we talk about what our kids are facing, we'll get into a little more. Sometimes I get a little excited and I'll run over something, so while it's in my mind, I'm going to tell you. What we're seeing right now at the unit is a huge increase in sextortion, right? So sextortion is basically, the breakdown is this, and actually our biggest, newest victim pool is young boys. So they end up talking to someone who they believe to be a female online. That person convinces the victim to producing either sexually graphic images or videos. They always want a picture of the face. As soon as the face is sent, the response comes back is, if you don't send me $1,000, I'm going to post this to your friends and family all over on every social media platform you have. Right? So that's sextortion. But we're seeing a huge increase in that right now. Unfortunately, a lot of those bad actors are coming from the Ivory Coast and Nigeria for whatever reason that is right now. So we're trying to work with our federal partners to reach out and grab those bad actors. But what we're doing now, this is one reason why I really jumped on wanting to be here tonight, education and communication on those types of things are going to be huge for us. It's a preventative reaction to this right now because I'm going to be honest with you. I'm always honest. I'm going to be frank. How about that? We're not going to be able to reach out to that suspect, most likely. But what we can do is protect our kids from ever going down that road. And we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about or how we're going to talk to our kids. Because the first thing kids, you know, obviously are sometimes horribly embarrassed. Second of all, they're made to feel they did something wrong, most of the time by the suspect. Right? And that's a lot of things that we talk about. Like tomorrow when I talk to everyone's kids, the biggest thing is it's not your fault. It's absolutely not your fault. That's the whole point of the grooming process. To isolate and to show that they try to make the kid feel like it's their fault so they won't tell, so they'll continue the action. And I'll tell you, my very good friend Terry produced some awesome sextortion resource cards. I would really encourage everyone to get some of those. It's just ideas, right? How to communicate. If you don't get anything else from this today, I would really want you to hear that portion on sextortion because it is rampant. There's cases in Buffalo that we're working right now. There's cases in Gillette, there's cases in Burns, there's cases in towns I've never even heard of, and I'm from my own. So, you know, that's the thing with these crimes. The internet is global, right? If you have internet service, you can talk to someone in God knows where. So there's no way to get away from the book.
Also, I'll just since we're talking about it. Some of our national and regional partners are telling us that what they're seeing, since it is young boys being targeted, it's harder for young boys to sometimes go and ask for help. There's a lot of extra levels of shame and stigma being a male victim of this crime, and so they're also seeing an unfortunate uptick in young males committing suicide as a result of some of these things. So,
yeah, and that's, you know, like last week, I got four priority two tips. They were all sextortion. There was all suicidal ideation involved in this. Right, we're able to reach out and contact those victims, get them services, and just make sure that right now that's what we're doing. Right, we want to make sure the victim's okay and that we know that they have someone there that wants to help. Because the other part of that grooming process is they really try to isolate our victims. So, kind of stole the thunder of my own other slide down the road, but we can talk about that again. It's okay. So a little bit about some more about what we do. Here's some more numbers, and I don't want to beat this horse too much, but it just shows, like in 2020, you know, we had production. When we talk about production, we're talking about live production. Someone in the state of Wyoming is sexually assaulting a kid, filming it or taking pictures, and then trading it or selling it to others on the internet. That's production. Okay. So we had 9 arrests for production. 16 child victims were identified and rescued in 2020. That was more than the previous 5 years combined. Right. Our unit was recognized by the U.S. Attorney's Office for those acts. So in 2021, you know, we thought, wow, we did a pretty good job. Well, in 21, you know, we get more tips, we get more work, we got actually 10% less people, and you just got to keep your foot to the floor, right? So we ended up with 33 arrests for production and hands-on offensive, 22 child victims identified and rescued, right? To date, we've got 25 arrests, 16 child victims identified, and we got the first meritorious unit award given by the U.S. Attorney's Office for outstanding casework in 2021, and we were recognized for the Boots on the Ground Award recently, as well as the first time that a whole unit was recognized with that. And I always say that, that's what, I mean, we are your unit. We don't speak well, but that is what we do. I always try to take the time to say, like, you do have folks out there that are really giving their all for the state, for these kids. So I think that's important, especially since it's not going to slow down anytime soon. You know, we're not going to quit. You know, it's a race to see who quits first, and it ain't going to be us, I'll tell you that much. So, anyway, so down here, I just put in Grable, Burns, Larry, and Cheyenne. These are all just examples. You know, one thing I'll say is there's no real demographic that really shows, hey, this is our offender. You know, when I work drug cases, I work specific organizations. Sometimes you could identify those types of suspects, if that makes sense. So I wrongly, when I came to this unit, I was like, well, I'm sure there's kind of a known demographic of an offender. And I think some of us, including myself, sometimes thought like, well, this is some weirdo with a neck beard living in his mom's basement. He's 32. Right? Sometimes that's true, but a lot of times it's not true. Just in these cases, in the last 4 months, we've had two guys that literally lived in a junkyard in Torrington. It was the worst place I've ever seen. And I've been to see some really bad places. It was the absolute worst. I'll tell a quick story even though it's being recorded. Everyone else gagged. Everyone, even the drug guys. I don't have a sense of smell. So I was like, I don't even know what you guys are talking about. It's fine with me. But, you know, it was just horrible. It was horrible. So we have those two folks. Then we turn around. We have a city councilman and police commissioner in Bighorn County. Right, we have a former teacher and daycare worker in Laramie County. We have a high school student also in Laramie County. You know, we have college students in Park County. So we just don't have a good demographic. So it can be, you know, this is a little bit, it's not scientifically proven, this is just what I see a little bit is, you know, I just think that with that increased access to the internet, people can go down a rabbit hole sometimes that, you know, there's no real demographic there. So nothing really surprises me who we might run onto anymore. So we just had, as an example, we just arrested a prison guard from Rollins, right? So we talked about peer-to-peer. One thing I'll say, it used to be like peer-to-peer stuff was always pretty much on a desk computer. Does that make sense? Now we do everything's mobile, right? And all your kids have, this is not a accusation, the vast majority of kids have a smartphone right now. Everything's off that smartphone. We don't usually seize a tower computer. This person that was actually running peer-to-peer software on their phone. So he's going to work at the prison while his phone is broadcasting child pornography for upload or download. So it's crazy. So those are just some of the highlights of what we're talking about, you know, some light work. But and on that topic, I joke, because if you don't joke, I mean, I don't know, I'd probably cry all day long. But I want everyone to know too, like, there's a lot of hard stuff that's happened, but the vast majority of our kids know how to protect themselves. They actually protect each other. You know, almost sometimes to the degree where I wish they'd tell someone else first. But they know how to protect themselves, and very, actually a pretty small percentage engage in this kind of activity. And I'm not, certainly not blaming those that do, by any means, because there's a million reasons why it happens. But it's not, like, even though I think sometimes kids think everyone's doing it, actually a pretty small percentage. So with sextortion, I know one percentage, like, talk about maybe 5% of kids in the United States have been, there's been at least an attempt at sextortion. So in totality, that's a big number, but it's really 5%. Of our whole kids' population. So, you know, we do a pretty decent job. Go ahead.
Uprising, actually, anytime we work with youth tall enough, we do risk assessment surveys that are anonymous. And when it came to sextortion, we've now surveyed roughly 1,000 Wyoming youth, and it's about 9% that report that they have experienced sextortion.
So these are just some more cases we talked about. I won't stay on these two, I think we've talked about quite a bit. But one thing, like, we just such a, I'll give an example, like the Sheridan case. We were working a chat op and out of state, and this person in another city kept saying, yeah, I'll, you know, meet me. This guy wouldn't leave it alone. Usually we'll leave, you know, we'll contact locals, but it was to the point where we're like, okay, we'll meet in Sheridan. The person actually came with $1,250 to pay for sex with two 12-year-olds, right? So that's one type of CSAM case. Another case, this Gillette production case, you know, we received, this is hard, I'll just be frank again, this is hard for me to even talk about, frankly, but we received a case, it was called the Priority One Cyber Tip, and those are child in imminent danger, live production, images or files that NCIC doesn't recognize. Does anyone know what a hash set is? Or a git? So a hash is like an image's DNA or the fingerprint, right? So, you know, if you maintain a huge database of hashes, if that photograph has that hash, that's the same photograph. Does that make sense? It's like a person. That's how I do it. So when NCIC doesn't recognize that hash and it looks like fresh production, it's priority one. So this came out as a priority one. It was imagery and videos of a sex assault of a 4-year-old. That was being sold and traded. So less than 12 hours later, we're in Gillette. We have the person in custody, and I'm holding the same kid. So, all right. While you're talking to the guy. That's crazy. Sorry about that. So that's what we're talking about, right? Now, on top of that, those are hard cases, right? But we also deal with, like I said, the sextortion every day where we're trying to get the victims, too. So, I mean, that's the internet kind of in a small chunk, you know. Anything can happen on the internet, so we're trying to deal with a lot of stuff going on, and I apologize for that. I still do that. That's good. So anyway, so that's what ICAC does in a kind of a large nutshell, and I apologize if I kind of went overboard on that. But so what are our kids facing? So when I took over the unit, one thing, I felt like I couldn't really do cases, because I was still in that learning curve. But I always have done a lot of presentations, so I knew I could do presentations, and that's what I kind of took on to kind of be an asset to the unit instead of a hindrance, I guess. So I took that on, and so in the last, I know since last school year, I've done about 100 presentations, and these are the four things I talk about to your kids. These are the four things every single time. Extortion, exploitation, how to protect our personal information, because that is really one of the ways that predators try to extort and exploit our kids. We talk about, especially that, protecting our our personal information is as much as I talk about when we create an account. I always ask kids, what do you have to provide? Name, cell phone number, Gmail account or email account. So if that's all public, or if your pictures are on a public-facing wall, all you have to do is be a predator that's scrolling through those, find it, create a profile that matches your victim, and then you're off to the races. Does that make sense, everyone? So that's what we talk about when we talk about protecting our personal information. I talk about sexting, right? And I also talk about cyberbullying. So most schools have a really good bullying program, and cyberbullying is really just an extension of that. But I certainly put that in there in kind of conjunction with what the school does. When I started, we focused at the ninth grade level a little bit. That's just how it was set up. It wasn't long before I noticed that we were like several years kind of maybe too late. So I refocused. I almost exclusively present at the fifth and sixth grade level. And I found that's kind of, I presented to as young as the first grade level. Although valuable, it's difficult for me. Like that fifth, sixth grade, that's about my maturity level still, so I really fit in right there. It's amazing, some things that, just colloquial information. You know, I'll have a room, like in Cheyenne, I might have 150 kids, and I say, who in here has a smartphone? Well over 90% raise their hands. Which, you know, when I ask about apps and I ask about, when I ask about games, that's when you get some feedback and that's good, and then I get everyone in trouble, we have to settle it down, and that's okay. But I say, hey, has anyone in here ever had to block anybody? It's the fifth grade. Again, same amount of people as have a phone say, yeah, I've already had to block someone. So, you know, that's just like a bombarding our kids. And we'll talk about where's that coming from, you know, and that's not just, they're not on Facebook Messenger or Instagram sometimes. I mean, sometimes they are, but most of the time at that level, it's an online game, right? So we'll talk a little bit about that. Anything to add there?
No.
Okay. So when we talk about one thing at that fifth and sixth grade level that I really hit on is online games. And that can be everything from Minecraft, Roblox, and Among Us. Those are all very popular with younger kids, maybe some of your kids. And I'm not saying these games are bad. Don't hear me saying that that's bad. I'm sorry if you play those games. I'm just saying those all have a chat function. And a lot of those platforms will say, hey, we're censoring that chat. But what predators will do is obviously pretend to be kids in there. They'll start to approach a kid in the chat, through chat, start talking to them, grooming them, and then what is a huge red flag is when they say, hey, what's your Snap? Or do you have a TikTok? Or have you ever been on Discord? Here, you should come over to this platform. That's where we see, you know, that's when we see the grooming immediately get stepped up. When a predator tries to move a kid, do a platform jump, that's when we know that what that person's intent is typically, if that makes sense to everybody. So every one of these games, then we have like Fortnite, Call of Duty, Rocket League. I was still a kid. I know I'm 50, but I do play video games. I was just like that Atari 2600. I just went forward from there. But I said I don't play online games because I don't like getting beat by 12-year-olds and smack talked to very much. And that every game is a massive multiplayer online game. So these kids go into a lobby, and you folks probably know how this works. I'm certainly not trying to insult anyone's gaming intelligence. But you go into a lobby, you can play with your friends, you can play with people you don't know, you wait for that to happen, you get dropped into the game, and you have a chat game. So see it time and time again, I mean, from Red Dead Online to Call of Duty to everything, you know, get kids getting platform jumps all the time. Right? Now, that's where we talk about protecting our personal information. If we just play with our friends only, where we set all of our accounts to private, that privacy setting all the way, you know, you don't have a lot facing out there, so you don't have a lot for predators to create a profile to try to exploit you, if that makes sense. But every single one of these games are like that. Every massive online game has that ability. And I'm not saying that those games are bad, I'm just saying that's part of it. One thing I will tell everyone, I'm sorry, Jessica.
Finish.
I will tell you that although I'm not saying any of these apps are inherently, some are inherently bad, but these maybe not so much, but what these folks are doing is wanting to make money, right? So whatever they're doing is to make money. They will say, yes, we're doing this to protect kids as well, this is all the safety stuff, but almost all these apps, you know, they say, like, yeah, you have to be 16 to use the app. There's no age verification. So we have people creating fake accounts all over the place, right? So just be aware of that.
Also on these apps, you know, most all of them have parental control features, so hopefully you're probably using those, but just know that those aren't foolproof. Chris will say it later in his presentation too, but communication with your kids on a constant basis is really what you need if you're going to allow your kids to be on online gaming, because that frontal lobe development has just not happened yet for youth. They do not possess the skills to always think critically about situations. And to give a really great example, a close friend of mine who's actually an exploitation survivor, who's had multiple conversations about online and gaming safety with her kids, she actually had her own kids who were groomed online. She had all the parental features on. She's had those conversations about not giving out your personal information. But when it came down to it, it was on Roblox, and it was another, it was a predator who was posing as a child. Oh, what school do you go to? Well, I go to that school too. What grade are you in? Oh, I'm in that grade too. What bus do you ride? Oh, okay, I ride this other bus. And that's how it went. So this child fully thought that they were just speaking to another classmate. And the parental controls are supposed to filter all that out. You shouldn't be able to get out that much personal information. But it took her daughter about 10 seconds to realize that she sent one word at a time, she could send out all the information she had. So it ended up being like cops outside their house for a week monitoring because the kid had given out an address and a bus number and the school they went to.
Yeah, so just to piggyback on that, we just made an arrest and shared on a person who was chatting, posing to be someone they weren't, chatting with a kid in Texas, and that kid had their Snap Map on, so the suspect, predator, in Sheridan, saying all kinds of egregious things to this kid, but also saying, like, this is where you live, I'm coming to your house, I'm doing A, B, and C if you don't produce these images and videos. So, you know, again, if we have that Snap Map on there, I mean, it can be, especially if you have it to public, it can have a lot of red flags. So that's what, you know, that's just some games, those are some popular ones. You know, some of these apps, actually these aren't apps, but I just threw them over here because I, you know, have a huge slide. But I think a lot of people know Snapchat and TikTok, I assume. You know, those are by far, with kids, the two most popular apps to use right now. Instagram's a close second. Twitter, you know, that's one thing where people may not, you know, Twitter's not known to be extremely popular with Gen Z. Right, but it's actually the amount of pornography available and then adult subjects on Twitter. Twitter's almost like a separate Google search. Like some kids will go onto Twitter because if mom and dad are checking their internet browser history, well, let's say Twitter. If you go on Twitter, then you can search Twitter and it'll just show up as Twitter and you can look for anything you want. So just something to know. But the amount of users and data on there is just it's almost like a set of Google search. Yeah, Facebook, I mean, folks in here, not to age us all out, but we may have used Facebook, right? I'll tell you, like, I'll tell you that 35% of Facebook users, only 35% are under 25. You will not find someone probably under, you know, 20. If they have a Facebook, it's to keep track of mom and dad and grand and grandpa, let them know what's going on. Like, most kids don't use Facebook. I mean, almost no kids use Facebook. Not for anything that they want to talk to their friends about anyway. And that's just the nature of the business, right? Now, do you all know that Facebook owns Instagram? You probably do, right? Instagram is very popular, right? So now Instagram is the sheer amount of, I mean, just anything you want to look at on Instagram you can find. It also now has disappearing messages like Snapchat, and it also has a TikTok-like feature called Reels. So like I said, when you find these platforms, see if they can make money. I mean, even though that's hugely popular way to exploit kids, they'll throw it on there, right? So just to be aware.
Now, side note on Instagram too. One thing that we see, I actually went to a training a couple years ago and I heard this FBI agent make a comment that if your child has an online presence of any kind, there's a 100% chance they've been seen by a predator. And I fully believe that, but he was actually getting at not even just children who have their own social media or platforms. He was talking about parents who are putting their pictures out. And one thing that we've received a lot of reports and people send us stuff all the time at Uprising are people's Instagrams. And there are predators who will have an Instagram. They'll go onto your public Instagrams. They will take seemingly innocent photos of your child. You know, maybe it's your kid in their leotard doing gymnastics. And they will post them on their pages with the worst comments that you would never want to read along with the picture of your child. And then there'll be tons of other predators who are posting really disgusting comments about your child too. So know that like protecting what you're putting out is also just as important as protecting what your own child is putting out. Be cognizant of that.
Absolutely. I would also add, so on any, unless it's been wiped, any photograph or image taken with a digital camera has what we call EXIF data. And you can basically, like on your iPhone, this is a little to-do, I guess, how-to. But if you just go into, say, you know, right-click on there or click on the, not right-click, but if you click on there, look for data or edit and then data, it'll actually show you the type of the camera that it was taken with, the lat and long where it was taken, and the date. So what I always tell kids is if you have that on your public wall, and a predator can get that, and say the post was, hey, just home with my, you know, just at home playing video games with my buddy, mom's not home. So then a predator possibly knows where you live, when it was taken, and that you're alone. So it's as simple as that. So that's how I always say we want to definitely push out, you know, protecting that personal information, making sure we're on, are those privacy settings are set really robustly. So these other sites are not, like you said, these aren't apps, these are actually sites. And then I didn't really talk about YouTube, but see, YouTube is extremely popular, especially with everyone, but I see, when we see self-production of CSAM, we see a lot on YouTube from younger kids. I think, you know, the whole video sharing, live streaming, lots of people are excited about that. Lots of kids are excited about that. You know, so we can get ourselves in trouble that way as well. So YouTube is very popular. We get quite a few cyber tips from them. A lot of times it's due to self-production. In a case like that, well, a lot of times, you know, if we go talk to a kid or the parents, I would just say that, you know, we're certainly not there in an enforcement situation. That's an educational situation. So about 99% of the time when something like that happens, we just want to go reach out to mom and dad and kids so we can talk about how dangerous that is. We want to eliminate that kind of activity. So, and then these, of course, everyone knows what Google is, and Google Drive, probably folks know what that is, but these are all sites that can also store images and files. Does anyone know what Synchronos is? Does anyone have Verizon cell phone service? So if you have Verizon cell phone service, you have Verizon Cloud. Verizon Cloud is powered by Synchronos. So Synchronos is the cloud storage platform for Verizon. And so we get a ton of work from Synchronos because people will upload or sync their cloud storage with their phone. So people that are saving their CSAM material will go into the Synchronos account and then get notified. So if you see, if you have Synchronos, I guess know that all your images are probably being backed up there. So just be aware of that. And then Bing Image is a reverse image search. Bing is like Google, but you can just pull an image into the Bing URL browser, and it'll search like images. So, you know, that's one way people try to avoid law enforcement detection. They just pull the image over so that there's no real search history there, if that makes sense. So that's another one that's kind of a red flag to me sometimes if I see it. Some more dangerous apps. These are some ones, the other ones are pretty common. So, Omegle, Reddit, Discord. So, I asked a little bit, people probably heard of Reddit, right? Probably. Reddit is, there's anything you want to know about anything is on Reddit, right? There's 400 threads about it, including a ton of sexual assault material, child sexual assault material. Omegle is an anonymous chat app where kids can actually be paired up with someone they've never met, have no idea who they are. That's the whole point of the app, right? So we can kind of see how dangerous that is. Discord is very popular with gamers. So Discord, you can go to any kind of what they call a server. If you just think of a server as a chat room, that's how I would view it as. And then inside that server, there's other kinds of channels. So anything, it's just all chat rooms. So there's a lot of legitimate servers. There's also a ton of illegitimate servers, and a lot of times it's rife with predators. What I always tell kids is, if you think about the internet, we're all just, like in the ocean, we're all just fish swimming in the internet, you know, living our fish lives, but there's also predators prowling there, and Discord is a huge, huge sea for predators. Bumble is a dating app that has very little age verification. Grindr is also a dating app or hookup app. Monkey Chat kind of comes back and forth. It's also an anonymous chat app, very similar. Kick and Media Lab, if anyone knows what Kick is, it's actually, when I see a Kick cyber tip, I know it's going to be legitimate. There's almost no legitimate reason to have a Kick, in my opinion, account. So it's set up to anonymously chat with anyone, video share. We just get a ton of predators that will try to move kids to Kick. They also share their imagery and their videos via Kick because it's anonymous, so they find like-minded individuals. Hot or Not is like a rating app, which is super damaging to kids. You know, big time on cyberbullying in Hot or Not. No reason to have that. Hidden Calculator. This is one I always like to talk about because Hidden Calculator is just an app on your phone, and it looks just like a calculator. But it's actually a password-protected file folder. So you would just see a calculator on your kid's phone. It's actually a password-protected file folder.
But they can't use it as a calculator.
Yeah, they can.
They can.
Some of those apps, some can't. And some calculators, like hidden files, will take a photo of whoever's trying to unlock it. So just be aware of that. So any type of that, I mean, there should only be one calculator on your phone, right? So if there's some weird calculator, that would probably be a red flag to me. These are more chat apps. Here's a couple. You might not be able to see this, but these are two links that I put up here. This one down here is actually the most recent, and this is talking about that huge uptick in sextortion. It's a great resource for that. If anyone wants to snap that or take a screenshot there, this one is just dangerous apps. I've actually got a big pile of the 12 most dangerous apps available out there in no particular order. That resource actually comes from Bark. Bark is a producer of parental oversight app for smartphones. I'm surely not a paid advertiser for them. They do a pretty good job, but that I will say I'm usually kind of skeptical of those. Any type of that, but I read all those. It's actually very informative and explained what each app does and kind of had some conversation starters. So I would encourage everyone to grab one of those. Please do. I printed off plenty for everybody. I'm also glad there's not 240 people in here. I'm pretty sweaty right now. So if there was, I'd be in tough shape. Anything to add there? Okay. So we talked about...
I have a hard time keeping this up there, but we talked about briefly about how Snapchat and TikTok are the most popular. That is by far what we see our kids using on a day-to-day basis. And those, in and of themselves, right, Snapchat is so popular that I don't know that very many kids don't, and adults, not many times don't use that. So it's very popular. Some dangerous things is you can actually embed your TikTok username in your Snapchat, or your Snapchat in your TikTok. So we had a case where we worked, and a predator would just scroll through TikTok all day long looking for his victim, right? His preferred victim range. When he saw that, then he would look for anyone that had their Snapchat in their TikTok.
And if you saw Snapchat or Snap, you can send a friend request. And if you send 100 and 90 said no, but 10 said yes, that's 10 potential new victims. So I tell all the kids I talk to, if you do have that in your TikTok, I ask them to take it out of there, because it is just a great way for predators to try to start that conversation. Another thing that I feel is really dangerous in Snapchat is quick ad, right? So quick ad just simply grabs all kinds of similar age, similar folks, their username, and says you can just add all these people to your friend list. That's a great way for predators to get on your friend list and then have access to all your friends. So we're just wrapping up a case where an individual has about 200 victims, nationally and internationally. That's one way that person developed new victims. Who get on one person's friend list, get quick added by other people, and you just get more and more victims. It just almost, just replicates itself. So that's a very dangerous portion, in my opinion, a very dangerous portion. That'd be a red flag to me. I have two kids myself. One's completely grown. She's graduated college. The other's a sophomore at UW. I still have a conversation with them. One thing, and I'll mention down here, but many of us maybe in here don't use a lot of technology, and even those of us that do, you're not going to use it as well as your kids. Like, if I need to know something about a new app, I ask my son or my daughter. My daughter's actually better at it than he is. So they're born with it, right? Anything I learn, I got to learn. They're almost born with it in their hand. That's just how that's how our society works. So they're going to know it way better than I am. So that communication is critical. It's critical for us to stay on top of. We talked about our Snap map. I get that, and actually, I know a lot of parents are on their kids' Snap and on Snap map, so they can see where their kid is. Just know that that's a very public domain that everyone can see where your kid is. So the whole friend list, and then we have the quick app, and just self-propagating. So just be careful there. There's a My Eyes Only folder in Snapchat that also can be password protected, right? So a separate secret folder inside a disappearing message app. So that can also be dangerous for clear reasons. Any questions on that? I know I'm throwing a ton of information at you. I just think it's important to get it out there anyway. We talked about our fifth graders and how almost all of them have a smart device. We kind of went over this. We talked about our current trend being that sextortion. I do want to reiterate that generally our kids do know how to protect themselves. When I ask the question, it's always, we don't engage, we block, we report. They know that, and they can do that. And they do that. It's kind of crazy to me how many victims I get that report directly to NCMEC. Like, they take it on themselves to report to NCMEC, and their parent might not even know, which is scary. But they do know how that works. Again, they know technology better than we do, or I do, And I do this every day. So, is there a question over here? I'm sorry. No? Okay. So, a couple quick case examples. These are both, they're getting a little old now. I'm actually going to update these hopefully in the next week. These are a couple quick ones. I show this to you because these are examples I show your kids. So I always talk about, one thing is, I get a lot that, sexual exploitation of kids is scary and important. Good thing we live in Wyoming. It's just this is a good example of how there's no demographic, how there's no borders for child sexual exploitation material, right? If you have the internet, you can be victimized. That's how it works. In these cases, we had a person does anyone use Skype in here anymore? I mean, Skype's kind of the predecessor of Zoom and everything else. Probably all know what that is, but it's not real popular anymore. But we had a person use Skype who made such a realistic profile of Justin Bieber. And I asked kids, who's this? It ain't gonna be long before a fifth grader would be like, I have no idea who that is. Right? But all the teachers are like, I know who that is. I got that. So they say it's Justin Bieber. Individual made such an incredibly accurate profile that actually convinced kids that he was Justin Bieber. Right? And it actually turned out to be this guy right here.
This is Gordon Chalmers. At the time of his arrest, he was a 39-year-old technology law professor in Auckland, New Zealand. I always ask kids, like, how many contacts do you have on your phone? And some will say 20, some will say 5, some will say 50. And I always tell them, I've had the same phone number for the 17 years I've worked at DCI. I have over probably 600 contacts. I probably call about 5 of them. But, you know, I have that. When they got into this guy's Skype account, he had over 6,000 contacts. The vast majority of those were kids. So the apps changed, but that behavior continues. We have predators that exhibit the exact same behavior. Immediately exploit those kids into, you know, as soon as they think they're sending an image or a video to Justin Bieber, then the exploitation can just continue, right? They groom, they isolate, and then they continue. So some of this guy's victims, he was all the way in Australia. We had Wyoming victims. Our agents were able to actually identify and save those victims, as well as help identify Australian authorities, help them identify Chalmers. He was actually charged with 951 counts, which would amount to possession, distribution, and production of child pornography. The last I checked, and I was going to check tonight, and I did not, but his case is still ongoing. Australian law is obviously different than Wyoming, or definitely different than Wyoming law. But it's different, so it's still ongoing. So I also talk about this, and I ask the kids, okay, what are these? Of course, they know Snapchat, and they laugh because this is Facebook, and none of them use Facebook. We had another case where an individual is pretending to be that person, and this is where I always, when I illustrate to classes, that, you know, we also get a lot of questions of, yeah, child sexual exploitation is scary for young girls. And that's clearly not the case now. And it was never the case because boys are exploited just as much as girls. And now that sextortion portion is even greater in young boys. Well, this person was pretending to be a girl, convinced victims, some of which were in Wyoming, some of which were male, to send graphic and sexual images and videos to them. And that actually turned out to be that guy. So that's Chase Stegner. He was in his 20s when we identified. He was in California. He did live in his mom's basement in California, by the way. But two of our agents actually flew out to California, knocked on his door. He was pretty shocked to see us. But he was convicted in federal court and is doing 15 years in prison for production of child pornography. So those are just two examples. Those are in state. And I've got a ton more that happened this year, last year. You know, those are just two examples. So that's what we have going on. Those are really good examples of exploitation of our kids. It's not someone trading images that we don't know about. Those are Wyoming kids that's happening to. So what can we do? Right? That's what we're here to know sometimes, right? I know I kind of say it to the end, but what can we do? What I was talking to Kate earlier, and I don't know if it makes sense to anyone else but me, but really, I would say the answer rarely complicated, but it's rarely easy to do too, right? It's easy to say, it's a lot harder to do, but really knowledge is power. I know just from my own experience that we do not generally, as parents, have the same level of knowledge of that cell phone or the internet that our kids do, right? And that is something that, I mean, I'm no different. Sometimes I don't care about it. I don't care about social media. I don't personally have any social media. But I got to know about it because that's what I do for a living. And it's also important to know what your kids can do and what they're on, what interests them. I think Terry would reiterate this, that conversation is probably more important than anything that you'll get from me. I mean, having a real and honest conversation with your kid about what does your social media, what does it do? What are the risks? And what should we do with that? But protecting our personal information, like Terry said, not just your kids, but ours as well. That exit data is huge, right? This is kind of a boomer moment for some of us, but, you know, if you put on your Facebook that, hey, we're on vacation here and wherever, someone can possibly know, it's public, someone's going to know there's no one at your house. It's just, you know, this is the way it works. And then parental oversight. That's that conversation. There are apps that can help us with that.
But know this, I tell everyone, technology is an arms race. Every time we figure out something, being ICAC, you know, someone else figures out a better way to protect their end files. And a lot of times, those are the platforms. For example, iOS 16, the new update for your iPhone. Did you know that the recently deleted and the private folders now can be password protected on top of the other passwords? So that's something to watch out for. Every time we update something, Windows 11 allows for Android apps to be played on a laptop. So if you take your kid's phone gets taken away, they can just access their apps off of a laptop. So just things to know about. Biggest thing I always say is, regardless of app, regardless of game, regardless of any of those things, I would always suggest that whatever your kid has, you should have. And then not just have it, but know how it works. And that's hard for a lot of us, I think. It's hard for me. But you should really know how the application works. How does the device work? How does the application work?
Life hack. If you don't know how they work, a great way is to just own that role of the technologically impaired parent and be like, oh, what's that app? Can you open it up? Can you show me how it works? Teach me how to use it. And then you have your kid kind of going through their phone with you, for you, teaching you, and you're getting to learn how it works, and you're getting to see in their app and have them have that feeling of like, ooh, I get to teach mom or dad something.
So some of the things we have there too is you should always, always have whatever passcode to your kids' devices. You should always have that. And not just a PIN code, I always also suggest that if it's a fingerprint, if it's a bio lock, then you should put your fingerprints in there as one of the fingerprints, or your face, or make sure that you know that PIN code, not just for the phone, but for every device. And always be aware that there are apps that almost every app now, you can lock the app inside the phone as well. So just be aware of that, with a different PIN code if you want. And location services, I think, you know, it's super critical to have location services, I think, on for your children, because you want to know where they're at or where that phone is. Also know that, you know, who are they sharing that location with? So we just want to be aware of that. Talk about all these things, SnapMap, gaming lobbies, anonymous servers, software updates. Like I said, that Windows update allowing Android mobile apps on laptops and tablets was huge when that came out. So that was a big one where, you know, if you don't have access to your phone, you can still get on your Android apps. The other thing is, we were talking about earlier, and it's, you know, it's every parent's prerogative to parent your kid how they want. I would say that, you know, taking someone's phone away might not always be the best option, because a lot of times what we get is they just go to their friend's house and access their accounts on someone else's device, or not even at their house, at school, however that works. I mean, I don't usually share this when there's kids in the room, but I know my son, you know, because there's a lockdown, there's like a filter at school. Well, he's like, yeah, we just use a VPN, and you can just access the internet that way. He's like, oh, okay, all right. So, I mean, just be aware of that. I mean, should there be a reason why your kid has a VPN on the phone? I mean, that's up to you, but I'd ask about that for sure. Does anyone know what a VPN is?
No.
Say, I was making it. So, that stands for Virtual Private Network. So, a VPN is just a service. So, and I'll back this up. Every internet connection has what they call an IP address, an internet protocol address. And the easy way to think about that is that's just the telephone number for your internet. That's all that is. It's quite a bit longer, but that's all that is. So when we get an IP, if we can find the IP on an offending device, we can find out where that internet service is, right? Does that make sense? So when you use a virtual private network or a VPN, that actually masks where your IP is coming from. So if I'm at home in Cheyenne and I use a VPN, it might show, depending on where I set it, might show that I'm actually that I'm in California, or I'm in New Mexico, or it could show that I'm in, you know, Turkey. Right? So that's not dark web, that's not anything, that's just a simple VPN. So anything like that would, you know, there are legitimate reasons to have a VPN, right? Some things you have to access through a VPN. Some things, like if you're using banking or whatever else, you don't want your information out there. But you know, if your child has it on their phone and you didn't talk about it, I would certainly be curious about that. Like for us, and I, this kind of goes backward in our presentation, but we talked about all our cyber tips. We hit 700. We're going to be over 700 a year. And I'll be honest, folks, like that's not the low-hanging fruit. That's the apples that fell on the ground. Like those are people that are just on the clearnet, right? Those are not VPN users. Or their VPN, one little trick, like if your internet goes out and your VPN goes out, then you send in the clear, then we got you. So, but, you know, those are typically people that aren't even trying to hide all that well. So that's a whole nother realm. So just to be aware. And then, of course, there's always the possible existence of other accounts. Like, I don't know how many kids have, like, a fake Insta, you know, fake Instagram. Here's, oh, yeah, mom, that's my Instagram. Whereas they have that. And predators do that, too. Like, they will pretend to be multiple people at once, bombarding the kid. You know, the same person being this person's friend, and saying, hey, you should go talk to this person. It's the same predator, you know, encouraging their behavior. So those are all really scary things. That's a lot of information, I know. It's all here, I guess. So parental oversight, you know, phone access. Daily, 24/7, what do we think about that? You know, that's everyone's business, everyone's own business to decide. But I'll say one thing, kind of down here, one idea is maybe at the end of the night, everyone plugs their phone in on the kitchen counter until the next morning. You know, exploitation can occur anytime, but we see a lot of times, you wonder why, you know, there's uploads at 3 a.m, right? You know, it might not be happening in the middle of the day when we're watching TV. So if we're all plugging our phones in at night, you know, maybe that helps us control some of that. You know, I would say, you know, maybe parents then plug theirs in at night too, but that's everyone else, that's their decision to make. I'm not telling anyone what they need to do, but that's one idea. You know and control all the usernames and passwords to every single app. Right? We talked about that. And then, again, easy to say, sometimes harder to do, but communication is so key. And it's, you know, that's no different than when I was growing up or anybody else. If we have that conversation and we started early, we just make it the norm. You know, so we're not having to re-approach that subject when it's really awkward. I don't know. I think there's also some thought out there, and I don't know what I think about this. This is everyone's, again, own option, but maybe signing like that or talking about like a social media contract where we sit down with our kids and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to sign this, talk about this contract. This is what we're going to, these are the apps we're going to sign, or say we're okay, this is what we're going to do with those. Have that discussion, also another way to discuss those. I really like what Terry talked about, and I've used this many times. Sometimes on offenders, be like, oh yeah, I don't know how that works. Can you show me? And then, you know, they didn't really want to get in your phone, but then they show you their password, so then you have the password. But anyway, that's a whole different story. But that's also a good way to learn. You know, if we have a conversation with our kids, I've learned more about social media from them than I have in a book. I'll say that. So, a few parental control apps. This is in no order, and this is in, I'm not a paid spokesperson by any means. These all work. They all have their own advantages and disadvantages. Bark is probably the most popular. Also know that there's always kids or folks are always figuring out ways to get around some of these things. So it's not the be-all, I know, but it's a great tool. Norton, I actually think Norton personally, they're in their complete suite. I think they do a good job. They do agree. All these other ones are all, you know, ESET is for Android, MySpy, and then I added this one, Offender Watch. So the state of Wyoming and our current governor, who he's the reason I'm here today, quite frankly, he went ahead and
authorize the state of Wyoming to purchase a federal watch is something that we use at DCI to track registered sex offenders. But that program actually has a parental control app inside of it that is free for every single parent, every person in the state of Wyoming to download. The free version. Of course there's a paid version, right? But the free version, since we bought it, the free version is actually pretty good. It not only allows for tracking of text messages and phone calls, will also alert you if there's a registered sex offender around your kid's phone for a certain amount of time, or a phone number that's listed to a registered sex offender calls or texts your kid's phone. So you can just go on the Wyoming DCI website, and it'll lead you to where to download that. And of course, there's also a paid version. So of course, everything is a premium version, right? And I don't know if it's that much better than the free one or not, but I just did want to add that. And thank you, Governor Gordon, for that, by the way. So there are all these things that those apps do: location tracking, time limit, you know, monitor app usage. All those things are great options. Know that there's always imperfections in all those, and there's always a backdoor for every single app that's ever been created. And I think, yes, ma'am.
Yes, I have said now. I want to leave you guys with at least two, I think, crucial conversations you should be having with your youth if they have access to the internet at all. I do full-on, like, two-hour workshops with parents to talk about these kinds of crucial conversations, but I'd say two of the most important. Number one, grooming. Chris has mentioned the word grooming a couple times. If you don't know what that is, that's almost like a process where a predator is sort of training or preparing your youth to eventually be exploited. And sometimes that process can take weeks or months. I've seen predators who've groomed kids until they turned 18 and then literally like send them plane tickets on their 18th birthday. I've seen youth who are so vulnerable that that grooming process didn't even need to happen or happen in a matter of hours. What the grooming process looks like, it's gonna start, and it's a great opportunity for you to potentially make an identification that something risky is going on. Because just the grooming process alone is quite dangerous, even if they're never exploited. But the first thing that will happen is a predator is going to identify vulnerabilities. And children tend to put their vulnerabilities right out into the world. It might be as simple as posting that picture on Instagram saying, "Feel cute, might delete later." Like that right there sends a message to a predator that that child is maybe looking for likes or something like that. So a predator is going to look for those vulnerabilities, and then that's what they're going to use to target them. So talking to your kids about vulnerabilities is huge, because if they know what their own are, then they'll be more likely to recognize if someone's trying to plan on one of those. The next thing that they'll do is move into like a get-to-know-you phase. This is where they are going to be getting tons of information from your child. It's going to feel fantastic to your youth, because if someone wants to spend every waking hour of the day getting to know every facet of my life, that feels great. As a human, you crave that kind of attention, and a child even more so. But what you'll notice during a get-to-know-you phase is that your children might start spending a lot of time talking to someone online, or they might start talking about this new person they've met. It's going to feel very much like a relationship is starting. And if you take context and sort of take stock of that relationship and talk to your kids, they might have given out all the information in the world about themselves. But chances are they're probably going to know very little about that other person. You know, if they're getting to know everything about your child, their family, their school life, everything, and then your child asks them, like, "Well, what's your family like?" They might be quick to just write that off. "Oh, I'm not close with my family. Let's continue to talk about you." So taking stock of new relationships, that can be an indicator. You know, you have a conversation with your kid, and you might be able to tell if they're in this get-to-know-you phase. Then eventually they're going to start to fill the needs that they see that your child has. A big one that we see with youth is they are looking for that romantic partner. And so they're going to give your child what we call a boyfriend experience or a girlfriend experience. They're going to try to fill that role and be that romantic partner. Your child will 100% feel like they are in a legitimate relationship, because again, the front lobe, it's not fully developed. They don't have that critical thinking skill to really think that through and realize that it's a false relationship. Eventually, that becomes very isolating. Like Chris mentioned, your kid will naturally start to pull away. They're going to start to get more invested in that relationship.
And then that exploiter, on top of that, if your child does have healthy support systems, they're going to work to cut those off. You know, so if they get into trouble with you, they get into a fight with you, that exploiter's probably going to blow it up and make a big deal because they're going to be trying to turn your child against any supports they have so that they are more isolated and dependent on them. And then that's when they will eventually move into actually trying to exploit your child. And all through that process, there's a lot of trauma bonding, there's a lot of mental manipulation. I've seen grown adults who easily can be groomed, and it's just that much easier for a child with their undeveloped brains. But this is an opportunity to maybe make an identification. The other crucial conversation to have with your children, I think, is about pornography in general. I mean, Chris's whole presentation is centered around child sexual abuse material. And pornography is a huge driver of that. What we see is, I've actually gotten the opportunity through my role to work with law enforcement quite a bit. We train law enforcement. A lot of times we'll do what we call sting operations, and we'll get to arrest buyers, and I've gotten to interview those buyers. And I can tell you 100% of sex buyers, 100% of people who are producing or consuming this child sexual abuse material have been addicted and are addicted to pornography. That's typically where it starts. That's the root cause to the issue. And just like any other drug, pornography is highly addictive, and you need harder and harder steps to get the same high. And that's where we eventually see a percentage of people who are going to make the jump into maybe starting to produce or want child sexual abuse material or want to purchase sex in person, want to exploit your child. It's because it starts with that root cause. So when I tell people I do prevention, they always assume I'm trying to prevent new victims, which 100% I am. But also when I go into schools and talk to kids, I'm also trying to prevent kids from falling down that road. They don't realize the dangers of pornography. There's tons of physical dangers. There's mental dangers from pornography. On top of all of that, we know that in pornography, the vast majority of people who are in that content are victims themselves. They weren't doing that by choice. And so talking to your kids about pornography needs to be happening. We have books up here where you can start talking to your kids about pornography from very young ages, 3, 4, 5 years old, in very age-appropriate ways, because that's what it's going to take to put a dent in these kinds of problems that we're seeing. So there's resources up here for all of that, by the way. The whole grooming process, I have it out here on a card. All the kids in the high school who are participating in the program tomorrow, this will be in their bag. We have the sextortion resource up here that Chris talked about. I have a resource up here about sexting. If your child did ever send a sext, this has tangible things that they can do to reduce the fallout of that. So come up here and visit and grab some stuff before you leave.
Yeah, please come and get all those. And there's an app list as well. So I just have to take them back if you guys don't grab them. So please grab some.
All right. Well, first of all, thanks, everybody. Thanks for those of you that attended. And I kind of wanted to end with this. So, Chris, you're going to stick around. If there's any questions more private, we can answer those questions. And as a school district, I want to say we take this very serious, too. So when we talked about this at the organizational meeting, I felt you, the people in attendance here tonight, need to know what the school district is doing and why cybersecurity is so important, especially when kids go home and say, hey, we can't get on an app, or the school won't let us do this, or what we're doing with that is kind of explained. This is very serious for us, too. There's new cybersecurity rules. There's new things that we need to be up to speed with our insurance, and we'll talk more about what that is. But school districts, not only in the state of Wyoming, but around the nation, schools are becoming one of the main focuses on. We talk about sextortion, but we're also talking school districts are being exposed to the same thing, where they're going to come and lock down your entire system, and they're going to charge you a fee to get it back. So this is real. This is step one of many. Hopefully we'll get you back. We'll get more of these conversations in the schools, but it's that communication piece. As a superintendent, I feel you need to know some things. We have a program called Securely. Because we are one-to-one with that, it's a filter content, It allows teachers to walk and monitor what's happening with kids. If there's something that comes across that's going back and forth to kids, it forewarns the counselors and things of that nature so we can monitor what's going on. We have secure internet. By law, we have to separate everything that we're doing. So your student data, when they talk about that, and understanding where their addresses are, what schools are at, that is a very serious thing that we have to take. But that takes an infrastructure to do that, and our tech department is working on that. We talk about how we log into devices. That is coming. Two-factor authentication is coming. Some people are not going to like that, where you have to log in, and then it goes to something that identifies that that is you. That slows the process down with everything that we're doing. So those are just the quick things. One-to-one devices are on a secure network alone, so they're not just roaming the internet. So anything, any device that we check out through the district is through a secure, basically, network. PowerSchool is encrypted with connections because everything goes there, so we encrypt that. And one of the expectations for the supplier of PowerSchool or where it is housed, if they stay up and they monitor the security of that. Our educational framework, we are now monitoring apps. So that whole thing, well, we just want this, this is easy. Now we go through a process where we go out, we vet the app. Is it appropriate? Is it age? What are they asking for? Because, I'm sorry, you talked about Google and some of these other things. You don't pay for Google, but how do they make their billions of dollars? Well, because they sell private information. All right, so we as a school district have to be aware when we're downloading or using educational apps that we are taking the time to make sure we're vetting those so we are not a part of that system. We navigate, we're talking about digital citizenship. We update our servers weekly. And yes, I'm reading from a sheet of paper because I can't remember everything that we are doing. We update staff and students' computers regularly. Student passwords are reset annually. Antivirus programs on all Windows and computers or servers are done. Our drive encryption with our computers. Emails are encrypted. And we have what we call the black box, or I call the black box. There's a filter system that through the state and everything else that we do, we make sure that we're monitoring and filtering what's appropriate and not appropriate. So these are just the kind of the beginning of what we do as a school district to reassure everybody here, this is important to us too. But more importantly, what it comes down to is what they've emphasized here today is we need parents in the community also to be communicating with the kids. And for us as parents to understand. We talk about every kid has one of these devices. Every parent has one of these devices. All right, so downloading and looking at what you're doing or the phishing that goes on to collect that data is out there or access to that. So I appreciate what you presented here tonight. Hopefully as a district we'll continue to educate, provide more of these opportunities for parents, do some things within schools to educate our kids, but at least gives you an idea as we step forward. Lisa, if you would stand up real quick. Lisa's also the organizer of everything that's happening today. There's a lot of other volunteers here tonight, but this is just stage one. So the Right Road happens tomorrow. It's all day. All right? These are volunteers here tonight because they care about kids. When we did the parent volunteer meeting, that room was packed at the library. Tomorrow is going to be basically 10th and 11th graders. We are going to ask them to turn their cell phones off for the day so we have their attention. It's going to be a long, full day. But however, as a superintendent or an educational team member, I want to say something. It's so exciting to be in a district or a county where this is done by volunteer donations. Right? The people that are coming together for the kids in our community to make sure that they're safe in these presentations here tonight. Those of you that are volunteering tomorrow, I greatly appreciate that because we are doing what's best for kids. The presenters here tonight, thank you for taking the time to present. And those of you that are here, here's my challenge. We need to go out and you start doing your connection groups and saying, hey, this is important. So if we do this again, maybe we can get 100 people. And the next time we get 250. And we just continue to educate as we kind of move forward with that. So thank you for your time. I'll be around to answer any questions that I have the knowledge to answer, but I'm sure they might have questions of you guys. We have, it's like lots of information located over here. So we will kind of hang around and answer any questions for a few minutes, and some of you I will see again tomorrow morning. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Good job.
We didn't.